This is Hearts of Oak podcast. Free speech, religious disagreement, children's rights, and open and free discussion on any topic are bedrock to a democratic free society, and we seek to promote and champion these basic rights. Join us. Let's keep the conversation going.
And hello, Hearts of Oak. Thank you so much for joining us on another news review, and it is wonderful to have Matt Letissier Legault back with us once again. Matt, thanks for your time today.
My pleasure, Pete. Good to talk to you again.
Always good to have. Last time I had you on, we had a Christmas tree in the background. So the year has moved on. So, but stories are still thick and fast. So, thank you so much for your time. Obviously, people can find you. There is your Twitter handle, and let me bring up that so people can find on your Twitter page for US audience who may have come across. Obviously, Matt, a footballer regarded as the most creative midfielder, I think, of the decade. And he now speaks common sense on a range of issues, which means he gets cancelled everywhere and anywhere. So yes, no, started with Ukraine and then went further into all the rabbit holes, but we'll touch on some of them today, I know. But Matt, it's the first story, and I bring it up, is about footballers, which obviously is something close to your heart, and that was your career. And it is, once again, footballers collapsing, and you'd put this up. Come on. That's the professional, isn't it? HFPRO, the professional football body. How many more before you investigate? You're supposed to have the player's best interests at heart. And Aussie 17 have put up third footballer collapsing live TV this week. This was an Egyptian footballer. But yeah, I mean, again, they're the same stories, but it keeps happening. So tell us your thoughts on this, Matt.
Well, it does keep happening. And I'm sorry, but every time this happens, I get responses on social media saying, it's always happened. You know, you just didn't know about it because there wasn't social media back then. Okay, I accept that it did happen occasionally, and it was very occasionally, and that's why it was such big news. Three in a week. I mean, come on. This just is not normal. It's not normal. And FIFPro, as the World Football Players Union, need to be having some kind of responsibility here to look after their players and to investigate why these things are happening on a level that they haven't happened at before. And that's all I've been asking for the last 2.5 years now, I think it's been. And it's just crazy that no one is willing to look at this. And it's just incredibly frustrating. And I think it's a dereliction of duty from people like FIFPro, people like the PFA in this country, the Football Association in this country, the Football League. They need to have their best interest of the players at heart. And by turning a blind eye every time this happens to somebody, they're not doing their job properly.
Do you think it'll happen? Because we've seen politically information begun to go out, also seen in media, the media beginning to now roll back and tell a different story. I assume it'll kind of be a slow reveal in sport as well.
It's always a slow reveal, Peter. It's our duty to continue to push and to continue to ask for investigations. And what they'll do is they'll put a little bit of information out and everybody thinks, oh, that's good, they're doing something about it now, and then they stop. And so we have to push again to get all the information out. That's kind of the way it works to me.
What's it like? I've seen there are a small number of ex-footballers speaking up on this. Obviously, you, Joey Barton, certainly has come to the fore recently, and there are a number of others. I mean, tell us about those individuals who actually are seeing it and are willing to speak up.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to have a little bit of backup. it felt like I've been a lone voice for a couple of years, but so yeah, it's nice for Joey to start speaking out. Obviously, he's got a massive profile on X with, you know, nearly 3 million followers. So to have somebody with that many followers actually speaking out is great, and it's been lovely to have support from other players as well. And sometimes that's been privately, but you know, as I mentioned to you before, you know, when we put a letter together to send to the PFA, and I asked, you know, 100 of my ex-footballer buddies that were in my phone, if they would co-sign a letter with me, because they'd noticed that things were not happening on a football pitch that used to happen. You know, these things aren't normal. And if they were concerned about it, would they consider signing a letter with me to the PFA? And I think it was 98 out of 100 actually put their names to the letter. There's a silent majority out there who know what's going on. Some of them don't have a social media presence. And some of them have reasons of their own that they don't want to make it public. But I was quite encouraged by the amount of players that were willing to sign that letter with me.
So you had 98 out of 100. That's very encouraging, because I think we all sometimes fear that maybe we're in an echo chamber, maybe the word is not getting out. But those figures seem to show that actually the information is getting out and people are wakening up.
Yeah, I think for sure. I mean, it's been happening too often for people not to realise. It does tickle me when people on social media, and I understand why they do that. They want to be reassured that they made the right decision, that they took these jabs, and they don't want to actually think that there might be something not quite wrong with them. And so that they wouldn't want to have an investigation, because they'd rather not know a lot of the time, and I think that's only human nature. So I can understand why they think the way they do, but I'd like to think that they can understand when they take their biased hats off, that they can understand where I'm coming from and what I've experienced in my life as 17 years as a professional footballer. It's not normal what's going on.
No, ignorance is bliss, and I wish I was back in that position, because the world would be much easier.
It would, but I never wish that. I never wish that. I'm up for the fight.
Oh, so am I. Trust me. It's fun. You have to be up for it. Let's move on politically. This is a change in the political scene across the UK. And this is Leo Varadkar announcement. And this post was Scotty goes again, not sure who is, but actually it's an interesting comment that Leo Varadkar's announcement means that every leader complicit in locking down the citizens of England, Scotland, Wales and Ireland has stepped down from their posts. Each and every one of them has blood on their hands, faces of evil. Sometimes you know what's happening, you watch it, seen them all change. And actually this was a different angle on it. And I hadn't actually cottoned onto that there has been a change. All those people who've come in weren't involved in locking down, although they would have probably locked us down even further. Mm-hmm. But looking at that political change, that is quite big. And of course, it has been a big change, hasn't it?
Well, clearly it's been a lot of change. And it's very difficult to disagree with anything in that post, if I'm honest. And they have, but it just, I don't know, for me, it just looks like these people are, it feels to me like they know that the justice is catching up on them, and they've run out of the way. They've run away from their responsibilities, basically. That's what it kind of looks like to me. And the problem that you get is that, we can look at these leaders who locked us all down and rejoice in the fact that they're no longer in a position of power. But the problem is, it's the people that have replaced them are actually no better. That's the problem. You look at what's happened in Scotland, you look at what's happened in England, and you just wonder, is there any point in these people stepping down if all they're going to be replaced by is another clone of the World Economic Forum?
But Matt, we've got a COVID inquiry. Surely that will bring the truth to it all.
The COVID cover-up, you mean?
Cover-up.
The COVID cover-up, yeah. How can we inquire into this and do as little damage as possible to the people that are paying us to do this inquiry?
I know. It's great. I looking at actually the... When you look ahead, because we're going to have a general election probably later... Well, we will have one later this year, November... And the thoughts are actually it could be just weeks after the US presidential election, which will be fascinating. But actually, at the moment, I saw a poll someone put up that Labour would have a majority of 300. the Tories, the so-called Conservatives, have a majority of, what, 80 at the moment. So that would completely flip over and the Tories would actually come fourth in any election. But, yeah, it doesn't, even though we've got a change in the guard, as you say, it doesn't, probably won't be a change in policy.
And that's the most important thing. Until we see real meaningful change and people in positions of power who aren't, bowing down to the globalists and trying to implement the agendas that they've got going on. Until that happens, then I'm afraid the elections are actually a waste of time, if I'm honest with you.
Yeah, no, for the first time, I can't even bring myself to go. When you look at that list of candidates in your booth, and I'd been there before not knowing who to vote for, and arrived, looked down and thought, I don't think any of them appeal to me. They're just none of them. There's no interest at all.
No, I hear you, and we voted before anyway. It's not going to make much difference to me.
Let's move on to this story on the Amish, which is a bit of a left-field story, but then fits with the concern of the rollout of experimental procedures. And this is the Amish officially declared world's healthiest children after rejecting big pharma vaccines. A major new investigation has found that Amish children are free from the chronic conditions that are affecting young people across the rest of the world. And this is conducted by Vaccine Safety Research Group, which I think is Steve Kirsch is involved in, found the COVID death rates amongst Amish communities are an incredible 90 times lower than the rest of fully vaxxed and boosted, mask wearing and locked down Americans. And the story goes on. But it's fascinating because there aren't many communities that are kind of removed from the propaganda and the forced treatments that the world has been under. So this is a fascinating snapshot.
It certainly is. And I think it just goes to show, and it's something that I was kind of aware of pretty early on, is that actually, if you didn't own a television or a radio station, you probably wouldn't have known that there was a global pandemic. And that's the be-all and end-all, really. I think it's no surprise to me, let's put it that way, that the way the Amish live, it's no surprise that that these results have come out. And I think this is something that needs further investigation because it's pretty damning on the pharmaceutical industry, if I'm honest. I understand that, yes, studies are done left, right and centre. And it all depends on, who's funding the studies, have they got any biases towards everything. So without really kind of knowing all the data, it's difficult to have a real handle on it. But, my gut feeling tells me that, the less you can have to do with pharmaceuticals, the better your body is going to be able to cope naturally with stuff. I'm a big believer in the body is a great healer of itself, and it doesn't always need pills and potions to get you better. I'm not suggesting for one second before everyone shouts anti-vaxxer. I'm not suggesting that you never ever take a tablet, because I'm sure that at some point there are some that are pretty good and pretty safe and do what they're told to do. But I'm a big believer that, if you look after your body and you kind of don't abuse it too much, then it'll heal itself and it'll look after you.
Of course, the drugs that are the good ones seem to be the ones that have been tested for a long, long time, like ivermectin. Those ones seem to be the ones that are safe, not the ones that have appeared last weekend.
Yeah, no, exactly. That was obviously one of the big contentious issues was the obvious propaganda that went on in cancelling hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and stuff that were actually going to make people a little bit better, or a lot better in some cases. All that stuff kind of just added to the evidence that was it really necessary? Were the vaccines really necessary?
Because we've seen a lot of discussion in the media on vaccines for cancer, and it's intrigued me. And I think as you get older, you begin to think, well, actually, cancer is an issue that many of us will face up to, I think, one and two. And you begin to think, well, actually, blasting your body with radioactive substance probably is not my idea of the best way out of that. But this rush towards actually this mRNA now seems to be the great solution to cancers. It's a narrative that we're being fed, and I think we've begun to question the narrative over the last 4 years, certainly.
Yeah, we certainly have. And I think obviously the mRNA technology that was used in the COVID jabs has resulted in more adverse reactions than all the other vaccines added up together in history. I don't think there's any question about that. The data says that. And so why they're rushing to put mRNA technology towards cancer vaccines is an absolute mystery to me. This stuff is clearly not doing what they thought it was going to do, or maybe it is doing what they thought it was going to do, and it's doing its job properly, if you're of the opinion that there's a global depopulation agenda going on. But I don't see how they can really market it in such a way after it not really working very well for COVID.
No, 100%. Let's jump on back to football, and this is the big story that's been in the UK, and I know Joey Barton has talked a lot about this, and there were all different parts of this story. And this is Nike, who I think now back down, redoing the English flag. And Joey kind of connects them all together, trying to sneak that woke, gay, communist nonsense onto the England national team jersey. He's got such keywords in one line. I love it. It'll be to appease all the lesbians who play for Lioness and in women's football. Nothing playful about it. Another move in their attempted coup d'etat off the men's game. Leave our flag and our game alone. Give me your thoughts on this, and kind of to give us the story for those maybe who haven't followed it outside the UK, and kind of how this has developed.
Yeah, so obviously Nike put out this New England shirt and with a doctored St. George's flag, and it was clear that this was not going to be going down well with the England fans. This is obviously something that is probably part of a far bigger agenda that we know about. But, Nike have taken all the heat for this at the moment. And I was thinking about it this morning. I've been fairly busy the last couple of days. I don't have really time to digest and take it all in. But having thought about it this morning, somebody at the FA would have given a brief cutting on the England shirt when they were talking about it. So, perhaps Nike would just under orders, first and foremost. And secondly, there's got to be somebody at the FA who sanctioned this, who, when Nike went back to them and went, this is what we're going to do, somebody at the FA would have gone, oh, yeah, that's a really good idea. Let's do that. Now, what really gets to me about these instances is you never get to see the person, the one that goes, yes, that was me. That was my job. I did that. Nobody wants to hold their hand up, and it's a disgrace what they're trying to do. We all know what they're trying to do. They're trying to erase our history. They're trying to do everything to damage our culture in this country. Divide and conquer is happening all over the place. And the stuff that they do that they say is in because they want to unify everybody, and everything that they do is the complete inverse of what they say they do. They know that this is going to not unite people at all. This is going to divide people like no other, and they know that. And it's a disgrace, really, that it's ever got that far. A disgrace from the FA and a disgrace from Nike. But I'm probably, thinking about it on reflection, I'm probably more embarrassed by the FA than I am by Nike.
Well, this is from the Daily Mail, how they covered it. Outrage fans demand Nike recalls England's official kit for Euro 2024 after a change in St. George's cross from red to light blue and purple. As manufacturer claims, playful update will unite and inspire. It's kind of mocking. I mean, you don't really change your national flag. That's your identity. That's your basis. That's very much part of who anyone is from whatever country they're from. But obviously they sat down and had a conversation with, this is the official kit. This isn't just Nike as a US company coming up with their own logo, redoing the English flag. Actually, it is the official kit, and therefore you're right, a full-on conversation with the National Football Association.
Yeah. No, absolutely, 100%. And I'm afraid there's somebody at the FA who was responsible for that, and he's going to have to hold his hand up. And I think the best thing he can do is come out and apologise for a serious lack of judgment and then hope that his bosses are lenient on him and he can keep his job.
There's also, it's that side, but the other side, I think, is actually just mentions here costs up to £125. And I guess the sums of money involved for getting a T-shirt and a pair of shorts. I mean, how does a T-shirt and pair of shorts end up costing £125? That most people would, I mean, if you've got 2-3 children, they want an England kit, that's close to £400. That's bonkers.
Do you know what I think should happen, Peter? I think shops should actually legally have to tell you what their profit margin is on each piece of kit that they're selling. And I think once people see that, once people see how much it's cost them to put it on the shelves and how much they're charging the public, I think the public will have a very different opinion on what they would go and buy. And I think it's something that could be done in this country, and I would be fascinated to see the outcomes and what the profit margins are on each and everything that's sold in our shops.
But kind of, you think the cart coming before the horse, and which way round is it with the money that goes into the football, and part of it is advertising, sponsorship, part of it is the commercialization side. And therefore, I guess, if the money goes up, that's given, I guess, as gate receipts for many clubs become maybe even less important than actually revenue off the pitch. And money has to come from somewhere. And I guess it's the public that get fleeced through higher ticket prices, but also the higher cost of showing they actually support a team.
Oh, no, absolutely. I think the fact that nowadays, you know, gate receipts is a fairly small percentage of what a club will earn in the Premier League these days. And I think that's reflected in the way that the football clubs actually treat their fans. I think they do treat them as an inconsequence, really. They're the last people in their thoughts when it comes to scheduling football matches, in terms of the FA, in terms of the Premier League, when they do their fixture lists. I think, because the broadcasters are pumping so much money into the game, they've actually put they control the game, and football doesn't actually control itself. The game is being controlled by the broadcasters and by the money that is being pumped in. And sometimes I think that the best thing that could happen to it is actually for the bubble to go pop, people start earning, you know, reasonable wages again, and the game becomes a lot cheaper for people to go and watch. But, you know, in the world of today, that's probably not going to happen, because there's too much control and too much power to be had by having a lot of money and having a lot of control over such a massive industry.
I mean, is it because football clubs at one point were a central part of a community, kind of in one similar, I guess, to how a pub can be a hub for a community? Football clubs were also that. And I remember talking to my Granda, we're going watching Carrick Rangers play over Northern Ireland, and that was what you did, and it brought people together. And it seems to be that football has, I guess, moved away from that connection with local community. Is that a fair enough suggestion?
I think it's a fair suggestion at the top end. I still feel like the smaller clubs still really need to have that connection with their community for them to prosper, because they don't get the massive riches from, you know, the Premier League and all the TV deals. So they've got to nourish their community. They've got to make sure that they do things within that community that encourage people to come and watch their football matches. Because at that level, the gate receipts are, you know, a much bigger proportion to the club's earnings. So you'll always find, I think, at the moment, that the smaller clubs will always have a better connection with their fan base than the ones right at the top that don't really need their money.
Okay. Let's go back on to kind of politics. Well, it's not really politics. This is Lee Anderson, who obviously was a Conservative MP and has moved over to Reform. And he will, I'll just play the short video, just 40 seconds, but he said, "I quiz Rebecca Knox, chair of Dorset and Wiltshire Fire and Rescue Authority, on why she agrees her force is institutionally racist. Her answer is quite something." Let me play this because I think it shows how many of our officials repeat a mantra and they have zero idea what they're actually talking about. So here is the chair of the Fire and Rescue Authority, Dorset and Wiltshire, down the southwest of England.
Thanks, Chair. Just a couple of quick questions, please, for Councillor Rebecca Knox. I think you was in agreement that your force was institutionally racist. Is that correct?
I agreed with the report, the okay. Independent report, and so did the Chief Fire Officer accept the findings.
Okay, so
of that
could
report.
You please tell me, Councillor, what unfair advantages white people have in your force?
I would hope not. None. Not advantages. Did I hear you?
Yeah, do they
correctly?
Have any advantages?
No.
So then how can you be institutionally racist?
I might have to get back to you.
I might have to get back to you. It's embarrassing when these individuals get called out. She said, "I agree with what was given me. I agree with the report. I don't know what was in it, but I'm sure I agree with everything it was said because I have to agree with it." I was like, see, that's kind of where we're at in compliance.
This is the classic case of the UI. Yeah. As you know, these are literally useful idiots in positions of authority. And, you know, she almost came across like she'd never even read the report, actually, let's be honest. They've just gone, "Yeah, you're institutional racist." She's gone, "Yeah, you're right. I agree with that." And you know, the smallest question on it, and she gets caught out. And it's just absolutely remarkable that these people are in positions of authority. I don't know if you noticed, actually, not only did she say that she agreed with it, but she then does the appeal to authority. You know, the Chief Fire Officer also agrees. So I'm not the only one that agrees. You know, I've got a bit of backup here, But no, white people have no advantages. But come on, dear God, these people just drive me crazy.
It's that repeating that mantra, but then using phrases and words that they have zero idea what it means. Obviously, Lawrence Fox has been through the courts to try and get the courts to define this little word, racism. Very short word. Very damning word on those who actually don't hold any negative views, I guess anyone else. But, I mean, it can be utterly destructive. And it shows the danger of using terms whenever people don't know what they mean and the power of a single word.
Yeah, words are incredibly powerful, you know. Some people think you can cast spells with words, you know. And it's quite remarkable that people are so quick just to fire out these words as insults and without ever really thinking about the connotations of it all and the repercussions of it all on people's reputations, you know, and they throw these words about so easily just to try to, and normally they'll do it when they're backed into a corner and they haven't really got much of an argument left. That's when you find people resort to those kind of slurs.
Of course, if you disagree, then you are what they claim to be. So you're immediately racist or phobic on something if you disagree. So you better agree.
Exactly. Yeah. We will beat you into submission, just like we're doing with every kind of LGBTQ plus thing on every channel on television. We will beat you into submission until you agree with us. This is how it must be in the state of North Korea.
How does it work? Because that was in an institution like the Fire Brigade, and your background obviously is in sport football, and you kind of see football and you see people of of every colour and people who have worked up from all different backgrounds. It's not just what you hear stories of kind of kids going with very little, and actually because of determination, because of parental involvement, they actually get somewhere. None of it is handed to you on a place. And where does the term, because we're told racism is in every institution, how do you see football, and is that accusation leveled at football? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of noise around the fact that there's not many black managers in football. So there's a very, very small percentage. I think it's something like 3%, I think, of managers are black. Don't quote me on that. I'm just pulling that off of something that I may have read. But I know it was very small percentage. So there's a big push to try to get more black coaches and black managers in the game. But what often gets overlooked within football is that I think it's something like over 30% of Premier League footballers are black. Now, in comparison to the percentage of black people in our country, that is actually pretty big number. So they're trying to say that football is racist on one hand by not having enough black managers. Yet on the other hand, football has over 30% of black players when the percentage of black people in the country is less than 10%. So is it racist or is it not racist? Or is it just racist once you stop playing football and then we could call it racist because, there's not enough black managers? I'm not sure where they're coming from.
No, and obviously only very few make it up to imagine. Most footballers don't consider or try or attempt or get to the management level. But yeah, if racism is getting paid the crazy amounts and opening up all those possibilities to a life you could only dream of when you look at the footballers of today, again, that's a confusion. What does racism mean? Is that what it means, actually getting more than you could ever hope for or imagine in your life? Doesn't sound like racism.
Doesn't really, does it? No, it's a strange one. But these people like to throw the word around anyway.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's jump. Let me ask you about something. I know you advertised a lot before we go into the last two or three stories is CBD, and you advertise that. Do you want to just mention that because you talk a lot about that? Just touch on that and find what people can get if they kind of follow you on Twitter.
So I've become an affiliate with Supreme CBD. It's stuff that I used for quite a few months before I decided to actually become an affiliate. I wanted to test the product myself and see if it did work or not. And rest assured, if I didn't think that it made any difference, I wouldn't have done it. This is the first time I've ever used my social media to actually recommend something. From that point of view, it helped me with my sleep. I get a much better night's sleep. My wife uses the oil for her osteoarthritis in her fingers. That's made a real difference to her. So I saw it work for my family. So that's why I'm happy to take the abuse on social media, being called a shield and all that kind of stuff, and stuff, which is interesting considering my income has probably halved in the last 4 years, but apparently that makes me a grifter. It's something that I'm more than happy to recommend because I've seen it help my family, and people take it for all sorts of reasons, depression, anxiety, joint and limb pain. And the muscle balm is actually for somebody who's in their 50s and still trying to play sport, still think that you can be a sportsman. The recovery from that used to take me quite a long time. If I played a game of football or tennis, it used to take a few days before the aches and pains kind of went away. But the muscle balm has actually made a real big difference to the muscle recovery. I noticed a big difference with that, which is so that's why that's one of the ones I kind of like to recommend really highly.
Okay, people can obviously find different promo codes on your Twitter. So do make sure, and if that's something of interest, then do have a look at Matt's Twitter for that. So the last three, this is Andrea Jenkins, who's an MP, I've certainly followed probably from back in the Brexit days when she was very vocal. And this is on the issue of sexualizing children. I do not want primary school children full stop to have sex education, nor do I want children to be taught about changing gender. We need to protect their innocence and childhood. Let me play the, I think it's just a minute long, 20 seconds. Let me play the 20 seconds of Andrew Jenkins, who is one of the last actual conservative Tory MPs, I think, we have.
As a mother of a child of primary school age myself, I do not want him or other children to learn about sex full stop, whether that's straight or gay. I also do not want to see young children at primary school to be taught about changing gender. Whatever people want to do when they're older, no problem. You know, life's short, be happy. But does my honourable friend agree that we need to be protecting the innocence of children and their childhood, especially at primary school age?
It's a really interesting, I don't know why it's such a supposedly toxic debate where actually this kids don't learn these things. It's for later on in life. But kind of, what are your thoughts as you kind of hear that and hear how, I guess, children are forced this issue, which I think is completely age inappropriate?
I wouldn't know. I would be willing to bet my house on not one person in my social circle disagreeing with what Andrea Jenkins has just said there. Not one. Honestly, it's so much common sense. And yet, we're having to have debates about it? I mean, seriously, I feel, this is how I feel about it. Primary school children should absolutely not be learning about that kind of stuff, not in any way, shape or form. And if any teacher thinks it's appropriate to talk to children of that age about sex and about changing their gender, then I'm sorry, that is no other word for it. It's disgusting that they would ever think about talking to children under 11 years of age about that. And this, I think, Pete, is also part of the big wider agenda, which, you know, they'll try and lower the age of consent for sex, and this is all leading towards, in my opinion, it's the slow decline, slow lead to normalizing paedophilia.
Yeah, 100%. Because if, in my view as well, probably many of our viewers' view, because we would have thought of this as sexually grooming children, you said targeting children, and I cannot get for the life of me understand how anyone would think this is a good thing to want to have a conversation. Two consenting adults, however weird conversations you want to have. But actually to say, I think we need to go into the local school and talk to young children about whatever perverse idea. And then for the Department of Education and the government to think, this is a wonderful idea. What do we need? We need children to be more sexualized. That's just what we need.
Yeah.
And obviously conversations have happened in government and it's been agreed, yeah, this is a good thing. And it makes you wonder.
Well, it makes you wonder why the investigation into the paedophilia ring in Westminster got shut down a few years ago. You know, are those two things linked? Well, it doesn't take a genius to work it out, does it? Let's be honest. All this stuff is not rocket science. You know, if you see certain stories and you look at them and you can't see the connection between them all, then, you know, I'm sorry, you're not looking at the right things.
Yeah, nothing to be seen here. Just move on. I've seen, I mean, there have been a couple of legal actions, I think, against the Department of Education, because you get the Tavistock Clinic, which was a gender reassignment clinic. I don't think it's possible to have that for children, but that's another conversation, seemed to be body mutilation. But that's now been banned, but it seems to be still pushed and taught in schools. And I guess there are many parts to this that affect children, affect society, and you restrict one area, but if all the other arms of the institutions of government are pushing it, then it doesn't really matter. So it's interesting to see, and I think I've seen two different legal challenges in the last week against the Department of Education. I guess that's what it'll take.
Yeah, no, absolutely, that's what it'll take. And this is what we were talking about before, where you know, they'll give you a little bit, you know, they'll shut down that institution, but they'll keep all the other stuff going. And unless you keep pushing and pushing, then, you know, they'll keep getting away with it in the background where you're not watching.
And I guess one of the things that lies at this, as with a number of the other topics, is money. It's not only ideology, but twisted individuals with a twisted ideology looking at how to make financial gain from this. And the whole industry, the whole trans industry, is a very lucrative industry from what I've read about it. So they want to keep the money going. So there are vested interests at play, just as the COVID tyranny, exactly the same vested interests at play.
Yeah, I mean, it's all interlinked. Let's be honest, Pete, it's all interlinked with all the ideologies that are trying to be forced upon us. And a lot of it is to do with money, a lot of it is to do with power, and a lot of it is to do with, unfortunately, paedophilia and human trafficking, all that kind of stuff. It all seems pretty linked to me.
Yep. Well, let's on to something completely different. And this was this billboard, this message at King's Cross train station. And obviously, it's the month of Ramadan, the Muslim festival. And here on the billboard, and this was GB News, I actually talked about this everywhere. Network Rail removes Islamic message on King's Cross display boards after fierce criticism. And it had a daily Ramadan message at King's Cross. And this taught that there were people who were sinners who must repent. It's the weirdest thing that actually I think there are bigger issues with our transport system, like not working, and actually to think what we need to do is put a religious message every day and it'll make it all right.
Yeah,
it's very strange.
It is very, very strange. I mean, geez, there's so many more problems than that. But what I found interesting, they said they're going to launch an investigation to find out who did this. Now, I'm sorry, but if you don't already know whose job it is to do that, what are you doing in your job? If you don't know what each of your people are doing, if you don't know who's in charge of that particular part of the business at any time, then as a manager, you're not doing your job properly. So why the need for an investigation? Honestly, it'll be like the COVID investigation, you know, the COVID inquiry cover up. So they'll probably be one of them, and nobody will actually take any responsibility for it.
It's funny, they can't make the trains run on time, but actually they're now going to find out who on earth is in charge. You're right, surely they employed someone to put stuff up on a screen. It should be fairly simple, shouldn't it?
Yeah, God, Pete, honestly, the world's going mad.
But I think we will need like at least a 3-year public inquiry to find out, well, the people giving evidence, all the passengers who saw it, just like the COVID nonsense.
Yeah, absolutely. And then at the end of it, no one will be to blame.
Exactly.
Nothing. And we should. And the result of the inquiry will be, we should have had more messages.
That's true. Twice daily, not just daily. Yes. Yeah. I really can't imagine. I'm trying to think back and you can kind of pick in one and not the other, but I'm kind of thinking, I really can't remember Christmas or Easter time having messages up at train stations or airports actually giving you Bible messages. So it doesn't fit. It's not as if well, it's happened, but you shouldn't happen with this religion. But actually, it's not really the norm of Britain, is it?
I mean, I thought we were a Christian country, but it appears that obviously Islam seems to be a little bit more important to some institutions in this country than actual Christianity, which is interesting.
Yeah, God forbid we would have a strong Church of England and would remove wet Welby and change it from to anyone else. So I would Calvin Robinson as the head of the church any day over Welby.
Yes, I'm an ABW, anyone but Welby.
100%. Okay. Last story, and this is a shocking story, and I'm sure it will concern everyone, and that is sunbathing. Actually, the discussion has always been cover up because you may get cancer with exposure to the sun, and this is this groundbreaking story. The Sun have released this hot and bothered: sunbathing for just one day increases your risk of killer heart disease and wrecks your immune system. And new research shows that languishing under the sun's scorching rays could increase your risk of heart disease and hamper your body's immune system. This is scientists from University of Louisville found just one day was enough. this must concern you, Matt. You do get a bit of sun down there on the south coast, I'm sure. So you must be very worried.
Oh, you know, incredibly worried. And you can just add this to the incredibly long list over the last 2 years of really strange things in the media that might cause heart attacks, but it definitely isn't the thing that happened in 2021 where loads of people injected some toxic substances into their body, not knowing what the long-term effects were. It's definitely not that. Can't be that. It's everything else apart from that. And if these people think, I mean, they are taking us for fools. I mean, some people will fall for it, clearly. But they are trying to take the public for fools that, you know, sitting a day in the sun is bad for you. Oh, my God. This is just, honestly, the world has gone bonkers.
I know we've very little respect for any of the legacy media, and gone are the days I used to enjoy having a paper and a cup of coffee and actually going through it. But actually, this is, you kind of got papers you think actually would be on a little bit of common sense, and then the Sun do a story on this, or probably some of GB News might even do. You get a lot of them who you think are on the side of common sense actually print this utter trash, and someone actually, you're right, has to sit like the sign up at the train station. Someone actually has to put this together, and I can imagine having an investigation. Who put that absolute tosh together?
Honestly, my good, I mean, you could literally, I could fund a study tomorrow that said, you know, actually standing in the rain for an hour a day, that will cause heart attacks. You know, and if I gave the scientist enough money, he could find a way of actually confirming what I'm telling him to confirm by paying him lots of money. It's literally that simple.
I'm seeing a Babylon Bee story now of government denounced lack of money causes heart disease, therefore government rule out £2,000 a month for everyone, or £2,000 a week, just to keep you away from heart disease.
Exactly. Bizarre world.
Matt, thank you so much for coming on today and not only touching some of the football stories, but everything else, of course. People, if you're not following Legod, you can get him there on his Twitter handle. And Matt, thank you, as always, for coming along and joining us.
My pleasure, Pete. Anytime, mate. I'll speak to you soon.
If you like what we do, sign up to our mailing list. Donate, share, and subscribe to our many platforms at heartsevoke.org. Thank you for listening.